Next is a class recorded on Sri Vyasa Puja, August 13, 2001, in Innisfail, Ireland.
An unusual coincidence that these 2 days come one after another, but it's not by chance that the appearance of a great spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, was 1 day after the appearance of Krishna, signifying his intimacy with Krishna and what he would do on behalf of Krishna. And so we celebrate these days one after another. But the Janmashtami is such a rigorous day of fasting and having different programs that, as our announcer Radhanath suggested that Vyasa Puja will be low energy day, but I hope that at least with this period of making the homages, it's not low energy, and you can rise to the occasion, and then in the afternoon it can be low energy if required, because this is not a festival to be the homages is not a time to sleep through. It's a time for everyone to speak for their appreciation of Prabhupada in public. I've been attending this Vyasa Puja here at Innisfail a number of times. Different temples do it slightly different. So I've usually been asked to give the lecture. Temple schedule is that somebody gives a regular lecture about Prabhupada and the spiritual master, Guru Tattva, in Prabhupada's place, and that. And then the homages begin. So I usually thought that my homage was to give the lecture. That was not good enough. I talk for an hour or something. But when I would finish the lecture, Tulsi Priya Prabhu would say, "Would you like to give your homage now?" And so I thought, I don't know what he means. And so I would say, "I just already gave my homage," almost a little annoyed. And I wouldn't give any more homage than that. And then I would sit and wait and hear the devotees give their homages. And then one after another, the devotees would go before Prabhupada on a little mat and speak either prepared or otherwise from the heart. Some devotees, however, at that time would choose to escape out the doors so that they wouldn't have to give the homage, saying, "I'm not good at speaking," and so forth. And of course, we can't force people to do something. We don't force anybody, but if we could, it would be nice, because nobody has a monopoly on Prabhupada. Nobody speaks for him in an authoritative way, cutting out others. No one should be so righteous as to his career in Krishna consciousness as to say, "I've done right and I know Prabhupada, I can speak about him." And no one should feel that they, if they have some feeling for Prabhupada, that they're not allowed to speak, no matter what faults they have, or even if they're now not following all the rules and regulations, because Prabhupada's praise is best made by a multiplicity of voices all saying Jai Prabhupada and appreciating him. So that's the real presentation, my talk, which I don't think will be so long, and then I will also go there on the hot seat and try. I don't have anything prepared after speaking. See what I can do to leave off the homages, and then sit as long as I can and try to hear the all the different voices of praise, not thinking that one person is more qualified than another to say something about Prabhupada. And as we hear them, we shouldn't think in terms of, "Oh, this person is not doing this, this person is doing that. But just hear what they have to say and take the good out of it as praise of he who should be praised. Some months ago, the GBC committee informed me that they were making a book about Prabhupada, and they asked me to write a chapter, and they assigned me a topic, even a title, Taking Srila Prabhupada Straight, meaning not mixing his teachings, but just appreciating his teachings as they are. And they thought that I had written on this before and was qualified to do it. I wrote an essay, but I never heard anything about it, or I never heard anything about the book. They said the book was going to be published today, but it never was. I did the same thing. The same thing happened 5 years ago. They asked me to write a chapter for a book, and the book never came out. So no one's heard this essay. I'm not going to read the whole essay. I'm just going to paraphrase some of it, and then the last 3 pages I will read. But the essence of it is that Prabhupada is our spiritual master. Of course, in ISKCON, we now have about 100 initiating gurus, but also we all accept that Prabhupada is the preeminent Shiksha guru for all the devotees in ISKCON. And we get the Shiksha from his books. His Khan gurus preach from his books, and his mission is given in his various teachings. So all devotees are encouraged to develop their direct relationship with Prabhupada. Today is an special occasion for that, when we go and talk to him, talk before him. So he's making the point that this access to Prabhupada should be direct, by not filtering it through other acharyas who are not in the line of Prabhupada. I started with a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam. Soham katam nu vrishne tava vritya sevam. How can I give up the service of my spiritual master who has favored me in such a way that I am now able to see you face to face? This was spoken by Prahlad Maharaj to Lord Nrisimhadev. Prahlad had direct darshan of Nrisimhadev, and he's explaining gratefully how that happened, how he was able to get darshan of Lord Nrisimhadev. It was by serving his spiritual master. Who is the spiritual master of Prahlad, anyone can say? Narada Muni. So it was a particular guru. And that's almost the main point in my essay, is that in serving Prabhupada, we're not serving a generic guru. Generic means just with the emphasis on the category rather than the person. All gurus are one, we say, but we're serving a particular guru within the category of gurus. Just like you can say, mother is generic for all mothers, but you have a relationship with your own mother, which is very loving and specific. You can't be replaced by other mothers. So similarly, we are not the servants of a generic guru, but I'm writing this in the first person. I say, I am not a disciple of a generic guru. I am a disciple of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the spiritual master who was entrusted by His own spiritual master with the mission to carry the Hare Krishna mantra to the Western world. There are other Prabhupadas in our line. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was known by his disciples as Srila Prabhupada. Srila Rupa Goswami was also called Prabhupada. But my Prabhupada is the disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Then, just as yesterday, I recited the pastimes of Krishna, which are already in the three chapters, generally known to devotees. In this essay, I recited some of the pastimes, some of the work of Prabhupada, as recorded in Prabhupada Lilamrita. I turned to particularly, I have a lot of favorites sections, but I turned to a particular favorite section just before Prabhupada came to America. And again, later this morning, we'll have a showing. Yeah. So today we have, we'll have the video of Bhai Charan of what happened to Prabhupada after he reached America. But what I wrote about in this essay, what he was doing just before he came to America, and that is those austerities and that those ecstasies after he took sannyas, when he was living in Vrindavan, but not like the typical sadhu who just stayed in Vrindavan and performed bhajan. When he was writing books, and then he was leaving Vrindavan and going to New Delhi and mixing with the printers and bargaining and so on, begging for donations, the whole effort was to write Srimad Bhagavatam, because he wanted to go to America, and he thought he should have these books to bring with him. And so he worked day and night in these various places with no assistance virtually. He even had to order the paper and put it on the rickshaw and bring it to the printer, and he didn't like have disciples and say, "My dear disciples, please go out and get donations for me." He had to get the donations. That was one of the key donations he got. He had to travel to 400 miles or so with his last little sum of money to Gorakhpur and beg money from Hanuman Prasad Poddar, a religious publisher there, and he got it. And then he was able to publish Volume 1. But all of this was done by him personally with great faith. And he didn't know what he was going to do practically once he got the books. He had no plans for distributing them except whatever he could do by himself, and there wasn't much that he could do when they came out. And unless they were distributed, he couldn't, the printer wouldn't print another volume. So, Prabhupada is unique. He's not a generic guru. He did these things, and they're historic, they're empowered, and they speak of someone very dear to Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. So we can think of Prabhupada in these specific things that he did, and we should. Prabhupada Lilamrita, The video and all these wonderful memoirs that are coming out. It's like a library of memoirs now about Prabhupada. And as I said, our own specific relationship with Prabhupada in terms of who we are now, our service, and our understanding of what Prabhupada has written in his books. Each of us, I won't say is free to interpret the books, but we're intelligent living beings, and we have to understand the books also in our own way, how they apply to our own lives, of course, in consultation with our spiritual master. But the books are living things, and Prabhupada's teachings are, say, organic and living in that way. But it's never without changing the original meaning of what he's teaching. Now, I'll read those pages. Which bring the appreciation of Prabhupada further than I have described in the essay so far. He's talking about the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he says that Sukadeva Goswami made the Bhagavatam sweeter by, he's described as pecking, sweetening the Bhagavatam the way a parrot does it. Sukha means parrot. So when he cuts the fruit of Srimad Bhagavatam, its sweet flavor is enhanced. He's not called parrot in the sense of repeating something exactly the same, but by sweetening it. Srila Prabhupada is that bona fide representative, like Sukadeva Goswami, who adds something. He too has handed the Bhagavatam down carefully, not to satisfy any mundane whims, but to take us gradually, step by step, to the spiritual science. He has invested his purports with whatever he felt was necessary to take us to the highest spiritual position. So that's why I like to take my Prabhupada straight. We often hear nowadays that Prabhupada might not have presented everything necessary for us to move from Vaidhi to Raganuga and beyond in his books. I assume you all know what those terms mean. Vaidhi is the very basic understanding of Krishna consciousness, following the rules and regulations, even when you don't have a taste, when it's not spontaneous, you don't have love for Krishna, but you do it. And Raganuga is when you reach the spontaneous loving stage. And beyond in his books, that perhaps we need someone to interpret those books for us or take us beyond them. I don't agree. Rather, Prabhupada has presented, quote, this fruit very carefully by stages of transcendental realization, unquote. And we should be, quoting him again, intelligent enough to know the position of Srimad Bhagavatam by considering personalities like our Srila Prabhupada, who presented the subject so carefully. We can learn about bhakti and all its details in any Vaishnava circle, but we cannot learn just anywhere about bhakti from Prabhupada's point of view. So the esoteric stories about Radha and Krishna, you can pick them up in any number of books. I remember 1967, very, very beginning, he opened a center in Boston. One of Prabhupada's godbrothers, unsolicited, sent us a whole bunch of books about all esoteric conjugal pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So we were peeking into them and reading here and there. We asked Prabhupada about it, and he said, don't read it, you're not qualified, and he's not qualified. But you can get those things. But if you don't read them if coming from Prabhupada, then it won't be in his way of presentation. That's obvious. But don't think that he's not giving it. You have to read his books. I remember another exchange. One of Prabhupada's sannyasis went in a complaining mood to Prabhupada about another sannyasi. He said, Prabhupada, so-and-so, he's telling things about Krishna and the gopis that aren't your books. And Prabhupada said to him, have you read my books? Indicating that maybe they are in Prabhupada's books and you haven't read it. Especially in Chaitanya Charitamrita, everything is there. And yeah, in that book particularly. If we are Prabhupada's followers, we do not need to filter his teachings through the teachers of any other acharya, past or present. His teachings provide us with the cumulative wisdom of the parampara. What I have discovered in my study of Prabhupada's books and by reading the books of other acharyas is that not for a minute does Prabhupada let us think that attaining Krishna consciousness is cheap. He repeats unrelentingly the importance of chanting with attention, removing anarthas, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and serving the spiritual master's mission. So although everything about Radha and Krishna that we may wish to hear, the higher topics, sometimes called of Radha, Krishna, Lord Chaitanya in separation from Krishna, is in Prabhupada's books, there's a warning that you have to be qualified, you have to be you have to follow the four rules, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and so on. Some spiritual masters give Harinam initiation without even, the devotees don't even have to follow those things. And then they can hear the high topics at the same time. That's a very dangerous combination. Prabhupada never allowed us to do that. If we may, we may take our vows and then sometimes fall down from our vows, but he never says that we shouldn't take these vows and that you can just take it all very cheaply. But he was so strong about this, we shouldn't resent him and go to someone who doesn't give any protection to make you dishonest. He never lets us think we can dance with the gopis while material lust dances in our hearts. This is not just Prabhupada's emphasis, but the emphasis of our predecessor acharyas, whom he represents. He teaches the importance of non-hypocritical following. Did he teach only the basics, or was he emphasizing the actual process to reach the goal? When we relativize our Prabhupada's teachings by filtering them to the teachings of another, we lose access to the particulars that make our Prabhupada our personal savior. He becomes a relative voice, perhaps not even the most important voice, in what tends to become an eclectic spiritual practice. I have heard Prabhupada accused of teaching only Vaidhi Bhakti and not providing us with instruction about how to step onto the raga path. If we read Prabhupada's books carefully, we will see that he is always teaching the raga path. His emphasis is always on Vrindavan Krishna, quote, that very form with two hands carrying a flute, a peacock feather in his hair, and a beautiful face. Just look at Radha Govinda. Is that not the ultimate in the raga marg? The acharyas define Vaidhi Bhakti as the performance of devotional service according to the rules and regulations. There are two types of Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti that has as its goal one of the four types of Vaishnava liberation in the Vaikuntha planets, and Vaidhi Bhakti performed to awaken the desire for spontaneous service within the heart. It is this second type of Vaidhi Bhakti that Srila Prabhupada recommends in his books. He writes, there's a rather long purport, I don't want to read it all, but I'll read toward the end. Dormant love for Krishna exists in everyone's heart, and it simply has to be awakened by the regulative process of devotional service. Here's a good example. One has to learn to use a typewriter by following the regulative principles of the typing book. One has to place his fingers on the keys in such a way and practice, but when he becomes expert, he can type swiftly and correctly without even looking at the keys. Similarly, one has to follow the rules and regulations of devotional service as they are set down by the spiritual master, then one can come to the point of spontaneous loving service. This love is already there within the heart of everyone. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. So spontaneous love is in our heart. It can be awakened, but not cheaply. We have to follow his instructions. Okay, so that's all from that essay. And now I'll end my talk. Something on the same point, the uniqueness of Prabhupada. Years ago, among friends, when it was on the 8x12 sheets, I wrote about a little episode when I was in a taxi along with my secretary, and we were on the way to the airport in London. And the taxi cab driver was playing the radio, and the radio was playing a series of songs by Nat King Cole, like what was A Nightingale Sings in Berkeley Square and Foggy Day in London Town. And then it was played There'll Never Be Another You. And after that, remembering that, I wrote some of the lyrics into something about Prabhupada. But I couldn't do the whole thing. I just did the last four lines. So I'm going to recite, not sing, the full lyrics to the song, and then read my converted lyrics about Prabhupada. Actually, I possibly could have sang if I could have woke up a few devotees this morning and rehearsed it, but I couldn't find them. It was first introduced in a film in 1942 called Iceland with John Payne and the figure skating queen of the 1940s, Sonja Henie. So it's, as most popular songs, it's boy-girl love. But actually, that's the highest love in the material world, and the feelings, the reflection of the spiritual world. And in some way, the intensity of them can also be transferred to the disciples' feeling for the spiritual master in separation. So I'll read it. This is our so it's a boy and or a man and a woman that I don't know the context, but they're separating. They're about to separate. This is our last dance together. Tonight soon will be long ago, and in our moment of parting, this is all I want you to know. There will be many other nights like this, and I'll be standing here with someone new. There will be other songs to sing, another fall, another spring, but there will never be another you. There will be other lips that I may kiss, but they won't thrill me like yours used to do. Yes, I may dream a million dreams, but how can they come true if there will never ever be another you? Then there's an interlude music. Yes, I may dream a million dreams, but how can they come true if there will never ever be another you? So I just made it a few lines that there may be other Guru Devs, but Prabhupada is true that there will never ever be another you. And since then, you can even say there have been many Guru Devs, but Prabhupada is true that there will never ever be another you. Okay, thank you.